Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Good, thanks. We've got a great poem this month. This is a poem that I wish everybody could hear and understand how important the concepts that this article published in the Annals of Family Medicine is. It isn't a profound question. The question that the authors attempt to answer is, when patients undergo repeated screenings for multiple cancers, how often do false positive test results occur? And at the core here is this belief that Americans have that any test has got to be a good test. There is no such thing as a bad medical test.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So what did these authors do and what did they find?
Well, this is from the recently released PLCO trial, Prostate, Lung, Colorectal, and Ovarian Cancer Screening Trial. And this huge study, they had over almost 70,000 patients and between the ages of 55 and 74 years. And they did a range of cancer screening interventions. Specifically, women in the intervention wing were given annual CA125 testing and transvaginal ultrasound for ovarian cancer for 4 years. Chest x-ray for lung cancer at baseline, and then annually for 2 to 3 years, depending on their smoking status, and Flexig for colorectal cancer at baseline and again at 3 to 5 years. Men were given the same test for lung and colorectal cancers, and they also got an annual DRE and PSA for prostate cancer for 4 years. Now, the researchers called something a false positive if a screening test was abnormal, but no cancer was diagnosed after 3 years of follow-up. And at this point, these folks have been followed for 10 or 11 years on average. At the end of 3 years of follow-up, each patient could therefore have had up to 14 screening tests. More than 40% had at least one false positive test. That included a third of women and half of men who had at least one false positive. About 3% had a minimally invasive diagnostic procedure as a result, something like an endoscopy with conscious sedation. And I don't know about you, but I consider endoscopy with conscious sedation pretty darn invasive.
Yeah.
About 16% underwent a moderately invasive procedure that involved removing tissue, general anesthesia, laparoscopy, something like that. And 2% underwent major surgery as a result of a false positive. The overall risk of an invasive procedure, any invasive procedure, was 28% for men and 22% for women. Flexig and chest x-ray for men and for women were the tests that had the highest rates of false positive results. This study actually didn't include screening mammography, which would clearly add a lot more false positives and procedures for the women. Previous studies have estimated that about 18% of women getting 3 mammograms in 3 consecutive years will have a false positive. So in this kind of aggressive multimodal cancer screening program, about almost half of adults had at least one false positive, and about a quarter had an invasive procedure as a result. And there's not only the physical harm and risk of these invasive procedures, which is not trivial, there's the psychological harm of being labeled as a cancer risk person, I think, and there's the financial cost. I mean, this is a gold mine for, you know, some people and some specialties, but it's not what we exactly need in our health system. So there's some real issues. Now, on the bright side, the worst offenders were Flexig and chest x-ray, which are, you know, not widely used, hopefully, for screening, especially chest x-ray.
Right. So it very important concepts. I mean, you've talked about the costs, and there are both the direct costs in terms of paying for these procedures, and then there are lost opportunity costs in terms of having to take additional days off from work. And
sure.
There are all the adverse effects and dangers associated with those that you've talked about. you know, you talked about the psychological effects, which of being labeled perhaps as a cancer at risk person. Mm-hmm. But there's that hellish period that I've actually experienced myself between the time that you get a test result and the time that it's resolved, even if it comes back negative and somebody tells you it was just negative. There's always that sneaky suspicion that, well, maybe it wasn't the first test that was wrong, it was the second test. Anyways, it is the psychological aspects that you're referring to are not trivial. I think they're significant. And we do these things often, you know, without really thinking, and very often without engaging the patient in a shared decision making and talking with them about the risks and benefits. And particularly for the low yield tests that you're talking about, the CA125s and the chest x-rays, we don't have to think about it. We have to have our patients think about, do they want this?
You know, I know this is kind of an area you probably already thought of this, but it seems like it would be really helpful to have in a very compact way, you know, a table that for each of these commonly used screening tests, you know, if I do this test for 10 years, what can I expect?
Right.
You know, how many cancer scares, how many biopsies, how many, and you know, what is the sort of number needed to screen in order to prevent one death or one bad outcome? I mean, that would be relatively simple to create, but I think that might be a way to communicate that to patients. But it is hard to communicate these concepts to patients who often don't have a good background in mathematics or probabilistic thinking, and you know, often using absolute numbers. You know, 100 patients like you, 2 will have a biopsy, you know, 3 will have surgery as a result, and 1 will not die of cancer. You know, that's a way of communicating it, but it's important stuff.
We have talked over the years about the number needed to treat. You use that often when you talk about POMs. You've just introduced one side of the issue, which is the number needed to screen, mm-hmm. which is something that is very understandable to patients. And, you know, that can be easily coupled with the number needed to harm. In terms of screening, and you know, patients can understand that, and you know, they may not like the fact that we're asking them to be involved in this. But you know, the bottom line is that these are not easy decisions, and the doctor shouldn't be making it by herself or himself. They need to be doing it in collaboration with the person and their own values.
Yeah, thank God we get paid so much to spend time and discuss these issues with patients. You know.
Anyways, Mark, we'll talk with you again next week. Thanks.
All right. Take care, Mike.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.